So those of you who weren't with us last week, we have started The Great Divorce. Let me give you a brief overview of The Great Divorce, which is my favorite of C.S. Lewis's works. Because, let me introduce it this way, every temple that has ever existed, anciently and modern, has within it a portion. They always have the same structure. Let me get to the Salt Lake Temple. Let me use the Salt Lake. Every temple has a portion of it that represents the telestial world, the world in which we live. You don't have to look very far to realize that you are surrounded by telestialness. You are surrounded by telestial invitations to do telestial things and think telestially. And every temple has in it a telestial room. Now, I'm not talking about the telestial kingdom. That's a kingdom of glory someday long away. I'm talking about the world we live in right now, portion of which is telestial. Every one of us has to struggle with... Nope, it's that one. Everyone has to struggle with the telestial natures, and every one of us are holding on to telestial things. Let's admit it. We're all holding on to telestial things. Now, at some point, you are going to be invited to leave this room. The symbolism is, can you let go of the telestial world? Can you let go of everything that is telestial? How many telestial things can you carry into the terrestrial world? Not one of them. If you cannot let go, I know we've got some time to figure this out, but if in the end you cannot let go of telestial things, where will you stay? In the telestial world. It's going to be very easy for Heavenly Father to decide who goes into what kingdom. He will not have to do much probing. He simply has to look and see if you can let go of every telestial thing. If you can't, you stay in the telestial world. If you can let go of telestial, if you can follow the invitation to leave the telestial room and let go of everything telestial, you can then enter the terrestrial room. The terrestrial world, filled with goodness, but filled with terrestrial habits. And every one of us are holding on to terrestrial things. And just like I have a natural telestial man, I have a natural terrestrial man. And my natural terrestrial man loves to hold on to terrestrial things. Now the invitation is going to be, come, leave. And everyone who can let go of everything that's terrestrial can leave that room. If you cannot let go of what's terrestrial, you will stay in that room. But there is another room. The most glorious room in the temple. In order to get to that room, you have to have passed through the telestial room and left everyone there, everything there. You have to have passed through the terrestrial room and left everything there. The Great Divorce is about that concept of letting go of telestial and terrestrial things. Now, C.S. Lewis didn't really know the distinction between terrestrial and celestial, so he groups them all to one. We can do that. We can talk about, here's more of a terrestrial habit you're holding on to. But it's a group of ghosts who get on a bus and make their way to heaven. Ghosts from hell who go on vacation to heaven. And when they get there, every single one of them is told they can stay. You can stay as long as you want. You don't have to leave. But what becomes clear is that in order to stay, they have to let go of the one thing they're holding on to that's keeping them in hell. They are holding on to something. Now, a group of angels come down from heaven itself to kind of escort them. And in those conversations between the ghost and the angel, it becomes apparent what they're holding on to. Last week, we did the painter. And what he could not let go of, and may I suggest is very difficult for you and I to let go of, he could not let go of what you think about me. I care too much about what you think of me. You have to let that go. And this guy couldn't. Today we're going to talk about the one person who stays, who is willing to let go of the thing he's holding on to. Now, to introduce that to you, let me take you back to probably the most basic, the most fundamental thing we all have to let go of. To introduce that, I want to start in the scriptures, and then we'll turn to the guy with the lizard. But I would like to take you back to the Old Testament, and let's offer a sacrifice. In fact, I want you to join with me. I've invited my 7-year-old granddaughter. Cutest little girl in the whole world. She has my heart wrapped around her like nothing else. But I have invited my little granddaughter, her name's Rosie. I am going to take Rosie to the temple and I'm going to teach her how to offer a sacrifice. We're going to go back to the Old Testament and she and I are going to offer a sacrifice. I'm going to teach Rosie about the sacrifices. So join me. If you'd like to follow along, turn to your Bible dictionary and find the word sacrifices. Look for the entry sacrifices in the Bible dictionary. In the fourth paragraph, you're going to see a numbered list. So sacrifices, fourth paragraph begins with, in all the animal sacrifices of the Mosaic law, there were 6 important acts. Now we could do this out of Leviticus, it's just easier to do it here because they're just spelled out. So let me pretend you're with me when I take Rosie to the temple, to the tabernacle, and we're going to offer a sacrifice. Now, Rosie and I have brought a lamb. That's the choice, that's what we've chosen. We're going to sacrifice a lamb. One of Rosie's lambs. And I let her pick out the very best one, and we've brought it to the temple. Now, number one, it has to pass the test because this lamb has to represent Christ. The lamb has to represent Christ. So Rosie and I specifically picked out the best lamb we could find, cleanest, whitest, purest, and we present it to the priest, and the priest says, yes, this is a worthy sacrifice. This lamb represents Christ. Now it gets a little bizarre for Latter-day Saints. If you've never done this, it's going to be a little bizarre. Step 2. Rosie's going to lay her hands on the lamb. I'm going to lay my hands on the lamb. We're going to lay our hands on the head of the lamb. Because not only does the lamb represent Christ, but it represents me. The animal in me. Every one of you need to understand that there is an animal inside you. There is a telestial animal inside you. It's the part of you that craves telestial things, feeds on terrestrial things. Every one of you, every one of us, I do, you do, every little Rosie is going to face the animal inside her. Now, can I just tell you, you either consume that animal or that animal will consume you. But you have an animal inside you. And so we lay our hands upon the animal and make it a substitute for the animal in me, the one that lies and cheats and steals, the one that craves celestial things, the one that you hide in the darkness so no one can see, the animal in you. Now, tell me what happens next. They hand Rosie and I a knife. Now tell me what my sweet, look at that little face. Tell me what that sweet little girl is going to do when they hand us a knife. Grandpa, why is he handing us a knife? Grandpa, why is he handing us a knife, Grandpa? Rosie, we have to kill the lamb. Tell me the look on her face when I tell her that. That one, right there. We have to kill the lamb, Rosie. But the lamb didn't do anything wrong, Grandpa. That's right, sweetheart. The lamb didn't do anything wrong. Why does the lamb have to die? And that sweet little girl and I are going to have a nice little conversation about why the lamb died. Why the innocent lamb who did nothing wrong had to die. And then we're going to talk about this lamb. We're going to talk about the animal in our family. The animal that's eating our family up. The animal that eats marriages up and couples and family relationships. The animal in me and in you. You have to kill it, Rosie. We have to kill the animal. If we don't kill the animal will kill us. So that sweet little 7-year-old girl helps me kill the lamb. Now, do you think she's going to remember this? Would you? The next time you sin, would you remember this little story? Now, what comes next? This is, I don't do this, the priest does this. But we sprinkle the blood on the altar. Now, that's pretty obvious for the lamb being Christ. His blood was shed, his blood was sprinkled. But what about here? I am sprinkling blood on an altar which represents Christ. I am sprinkling blood on Christ. And what I like to think about is I am confident that when Jesus walked into Gethsemane, he was wearing white. Knowing him like I know him, I am sure his article of clothing of choice was white. I think he went into Gethsemane wearing white. Now, when he went in there and sweat great drops of blood, what color is he wearing when he walks out? So Jesus walked into Gethsemane wearing white and came out wearing red. I meet him there. I am going to meet Jesus in Gethsemane, and I walk in wearing red, though my sins be as scarlet. I walk in wearing the scarlet of my sins. And guess what I do in that garden? I pour my sins on him. All my weaknesses, all my frailties, I pour my sins on him and he takes it. And he walks out wearing the red that I walked in with. And I walk out wearing the white that he walked in with. I think about that as I pour the blood on the altar and lay my transgressions on an innocent lamb who takes it.
Isn't it another thing that Hebrews wore garments, so Jesus would have been wearing his garments as well?
Yep. Now look at verse 5. We now burn the animal. This is key. You got to see this. How do you make the animal go away? If you have an animal inside you, how do you make the animal go away? Fire. In the symbolism of the gospel, what's fire? What's the baptism of fire? We sing our song, the Spirit of God like. How do you make the animal inside you go away? You fill your life with the Holy Ghost. You fill your life with fire and it makes the animal go away. And then you go home and you feast. You celebrate conquering the animal. And that's how Rosie and I do it. Rosie and I are going to now go home and take part of that animal and we're going to feast it. Now that's what they did all the time in the Old Testament. Now let me just show you how common. There was a group called the Inklings, which consisted of C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien and other great writers, and they would get together and they would swap stories and discuss. And I'm positive they shared a lot of the ideas that find their way into all of their writings. That becomes a major theme of J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. I carry with me on my keys a ring, the ring. It's inscribed in Elfin language. I carry the ring. Now, how does Tolkien present this? This is the animal inside me that I have to destroy. But the beautiful way Tolkien portrays it is, the more I put it on, the more it controls me. Gollum, Sméagol, wore the ring for 500 years and is now completely controlled by the ring. He has lost his agency. He is completely controlled by the ring. And even sweet Frodo, when he gets to Mount Doom, there he is. He's finally made it to Mount Doom, and all he has to do is throw the darn ring into the lava. What happens? He can't do it. He can't let it go. So Tolkien writes an entire series about destroying the ring before it destroys you. If you ask me, the hero of the Lord of the Rings is the one person who carried the ring and never put it on. The hero of mortality is the one that can remain uncontrolled by the natural man. I will not let it control me. Now, that being said, let's watch how this whole idea makes its way into C.S. Lewis's writings. Because in the writings of Tolkien, the natural man is a ring. In the writings of C.S. Lewis, the natural man is a red lizard on my shoulder who whispers to me and tells me what to do. Now, put yourself in this man's, but this is the only person who stays, other than maybe the author, this is the only person who stays. Because he's willing to get rid of the red lizard. All right, Great Divorce, chapter 11. I'm going to start here. Okay, let me give you an idea where I am. There's a big gap. Why did you bring me here? Oh, why did you bring me away, sir? Keep going. You're going to see a reference to Keats. Keats was wrong then. And then this paragraph, I saw coming towards us a ghost who carried something on his shoulder. Everyone with me that wants is reading from your own book? Okay, I saw, I'll read this. Should I blow that up? Is it too small? You guys see in the back? I saw coming toward us a ghost who carried something on his shoulder. Like all the ghosts, he was unsubstantial, but they differed from one another as smokes differ. Some had been whitish, This one was dark and oily. What sat on his shoulder was a little red lizard, and it was twitching its tail like a whip and whispering things in his ear. There's the natural man just whispering in my ear. As we caught sight of him, he turned his head to the reptile with a snarl of impatience. You shut up, I tell you. You ever told your natural man to shut up? You ever told your impulses, your inappropriate thoughts to shut up? You shut up, I tell you, he said. It wagged its tail and continued to whisper to him. He ceased snarling and presently began to smile. Then he turned and started to limp westward off towards the mountains. Away from the mountain, sorry. Off so soon, said a voice. The speaker was more or less human in shape, but larger than this man, and so bright that I could hardly look at him. Who's this angel? This isn't like any of the other angels that came down to escort them. This one's different. He was brighter and larger than all the rest. His presence smote on my eyes and on my body too, for there was heat coming from him as well as light, like the morning sun at the beginning of a tyrannous summer day. Yes, I'm off, said the ghost. Thanks for all your hospitality, but it's no good, you see. I told this little chap, here he indicated the lizard, that he'd have to be quiet if he came, which he insisted on doing. Of course, his stuff won't do here. I realize that, but he won't stop. I shall just have to go home. How many of you think you can just quiet the natural man for a while? Just be quiet. I'll be good if you just be quiet for a while. That's not the victory. Quieting your natural telestial tendencies is not the victory. It will not shut up. It will not give you a moment of peace. And so, embarrassed at having that in heaven, I'm feeling more comfortable to get back on the bus. I told this little chap he'd have to be quiet, but he won't. So I shall just go home. Would you like me to make him quiet? Said the flaming spirit, an angel I now understood. Of course I would, said the ghost. Then I will kill him, said the angel, taking a step forward. Ah, look out, you're burning me. Keep away, said the ghost, retreating. Don't you want him killed? You didn't say anything about killing him at first. I hardly meant to bother you with anything so drastic as that. It's the only way, said the angel, whose burning hands were now very close to the lizard. Shall I kill it? Well, that's a further question. I'm quite open to considering it, but it's a new point, isn't it? I mean, for the moment, I was only thinking about silencing it because up here, well, it's just so darn embarrassing. May I kill it? Well, there's time to discuss that later. There is no time. May I kill it? Please, I never meant to be such a nuisance. Please, really, don't bother. Look, it's gone to sleep on its own accord. I'm sure it'll be all right now. Thanks ever so much. May I kill it? Honestly, I don't think there's the slightest necessity for that. I'm sure I shall be able to keep it in order now. I think the gradual process would be far better than killing it. How many times have you thought the same thing? I've made it quiet for a while. I went on a mission. I've made my natural man quiet for a while. I think everything's going to be okay. We don't need to be so dramatic, so drastic as to kill it. We'll just take some time to do this. The gradual process is of no use at all. Don't you think so? Well, I'll think over what you said very carefully. Honestly, I will. In fact, I'd let you kill it now, but as a matter of fact, I'm not feeling frightfully well today. It would be most silly to do it now. I'd need to be in good health for the operation. Some other day, perhaps. There is no other day. All days are present now. Get back. You're burning me. How can I tell you to kill it? You'd kill me if you did. That is not so. Well, you're hurting me now. I never said I wouldn't hurt you. I never said it wouldn't hurt you. I said it wouldn't kill you. Oh, I know. You think I'm a coward. But it isn't that, really. It isn't. I say, let me run back by tonight's bus and get an opinion from my own doctor, and I'll come again the first moment I can. This moment contains all moments. Well, you're torturing me. You're jeering at me. How can I let you tear me in pieces? If you wanted to help me, why didn't you just kill the darn thing without asking me before I knew? It would have been all over by now if you had. I cannot kill it against your will. It is impossible. Have I your permission? The angel's hands were almost closed on the lizard, but not quite. Then the lizard began to chatter to the ghost so loud that even I could hear what it was saying. You be careful, he said. He can do what he says. He can kill me. One fatal word from you and he will. Then you'll be without me forever and ever. It's not natural. How could you live? You'd only be sort of a ghost, not a real man as you are now. He doesn't understand. He's only a cold, bloodless, abstract thing. It may be natural for him, but it isn't for us. Yes, yes, I know there are no real pleasures now, only dreams. But aren't they better than nothing? And I'll be so good. I admit I've sometimes gone too far in the past, but I promise I won't do it again. I'll give you nothing but really nice dreams, all sweet and fresh and almost innocent. You might say quite innocent. Have I your permission, said the angel to the ghost. I just know it will kill me. It won't. But suppose it did. You're right. It would be better to be dead than live with this creature. Then may I? Darn and blast you, go on. Can't you get it over? Do what you like, bellowed the ghost, but ended whimpering, God help me. God help me. The next moment, the ghost gave a scream of agony such as I never heard on earth. The burning one closed his crimson grip on the reptile, twisted it while it bit and writhed, and then flung it broken-backed on the turf. Ow, that's done for me, gasped the ghost, reeling backwards. Now watch what happens when natural man is killed. For a moment, I could make out nothing distinctly. Then I saw between me and the nearest bush, unmistakably solid but growing ever more solider, the upper arm and the shoulder of a man. Then brighter still and stronger, the legs and hands. The neck and golden head materialized while I watched, and if my attention had not wavered, I should have seen the actual completion of a man, an immense man, naked, not much smaller than the angel. What distracted me was the fact that at the same moment, something seemed to be happening to the lizard. At first, I thought the operation had failed. So far from dying, the creature was still struggling and even growing bigger as it struggled. And as it grew, it changed. Its hinder parts grew rounder. The tail, still flickering, became the tail of hair that flickered between huge and glossy buttocks. Suddenly, I started back. Rubbing my eyes, what stood before me was the greatest stallion I had ever seen. Silvery white, but with mane and tail of gold. It was smooth and shining, rippled with swells of flesh and muscle, whinnying and stamping with its hoofs. At each stamp, the land shook and the trees dindled. The new-made man turned and clasped the new horse's neck. It nosed his bright body. Horse and master breathed into each other's nostrils. The man turned from it, flung himself at the feet of the burning one, and embraced them. When he arose, I thought his face shone with tears. But it may have only been the liquid love and brightness, one cannot distinguish them in that country, which flowed from him. I had not long to think about it. In joyous haste, the young man leaped upon the horse's back. Turning in his seat, he waved a farewell, then nudged the stallion with his heels. They were off before I knew well what was happening. There was riding, if you like. I came out as quickly as I could from among the bushes to follow them with my eyes, but already they were only like a shooting star off on the green plain and soon among the foothills of the mountain. Then, still like a star, I saw them winding up, scaling what seemed impossible steeps, and quicker every moment, till near the brim brow of the landscape, so high that I must strain my neck to see them, they vanished, bright themselves into the rose brightness of that everlasting morning. Now I'm sitting here saying, he rode the lizard into heaven? He rode his natural man into heaven? What? And as the main character is sitting here, while I still watched, I noticed that the whole plain and forest were shaking with a sound, which in our world would be too large to hear, but there I could take it with joy. I knew it was not the solid people who were singing. It was the voice of that earth, those woods and those waters, a strange, archaic, inorganic noise that came from all directions at once. The nature or arch nature of that land rejoiced to have been once more ridden and therefore consummated in the person of the horse. It sang. The master says to our master, come up, share my rest and splendor till all natures have that were your enemies become slaves to dance before you, and backs for you to ride, and firmness for your feet to rest on. From beyond all place and time, out of the very place, authority will be given you. The strength that once opposed your will shall obedient fire in your blood and heavenly thunder in your voice. Overcome us that so overcome, that may be we may be ourselves. We desire the beginning of your reign as we desire dawn and dew, wetness at the birth of light. Master, your master has appointed you forever to be our king of justice and our high priest. What is going on? He rode his natural man into heaven? Now, his escort. Do you understand all this, my son? Said the teacher. I don't know about all, sir, said I. Am I right in thinking that the lizard really turned into the horse? Aye. But it was killed first. Ye'll not forget that part of the story. I'll try not to, sir, but does it mean that everything that is in us can go to the mountains? Nothing, not even the best and noblest, can go on as it now is. Nothing, not even what is lowest and most bestial, will not be raised again if it submits to death. It is sown a natural body, is raised a spiritual body. Flesh and blood cannot come to the mountain, not because they are too rank, but because they are too weak. What is a lizard compared with a stallion? What is a lizard compared with a stallion? Now, before I read the rest of this, tell me what the lizard represents. All the things my natural man is holding on to. All the things you are fooled into thinking will make you happy. The lizard is everything that people get confused that will make them happy. Sexual relationships, money, popularity. We are so tightly holding on to the lesser happiness, afraid to let it go, not realizing that when we let go of the lesser happiness, it will become a far greater happiness than we ever dreamed of having. What God is offering you is so much better than what you're holding on to instead. What you're terrified of giving up is nothing, is a lizard compared to the stallion of what God would like to give you instead. Pride compared to God's majesty. A few dollars compared to all that he possesses. A lizard compared to a stallion. It is only when you let go of what you think will make you happy that you finally get to ride the stallion of his happiness. What you are holding on to is a poor, pathetic imitation of the happiness he would like to give you if you let it go. Lust is a poor, weak, whimpering, whispering thing compared with that richness and energy of desire which will arise when lust has been killed. I know people that would never let go of sex, little realizing that it is a poor, weak, whimpering, whispering thing compared with the richness and energy of desire which will arise when lust has been killed. But am I to tell them at home that this man's sensuality proved less of an obstacle than that poor woman's love for her son? We'll do that next week. For that was at any rate an excess of love. You'll tell them no such thing, he replied sternly. Excess of love, did you say? There was no excess, there was defect. She loved her son too little, not too much. If she had loved him more, there'd be no difficulty. I do not know how her affair will end, but it may well be at this moment she's demanding to have him down with her in hell. That kind is sometimes perfectly ready to plunge the soul they say they love in needless misery if only they can still in some fashion possess it. No, no. You must draw another lesson. You must ask, if the risen body, even of appetite, is as grand a horse as ye saw, what would the risen body of maternal love or friendship be? That's a powerful question. How much more better would everything else be if you just submitted to God and let go? But once more, my attention was diverted. Is there another river, sir? I asked. And then we go to chapter 12. Thoughts? I'll tell you, the first time I read The Great Divorce, I was really bothered by that imagery. He rode the lizard into heaven. But the years that have gone by and helped me analyze that, I love the analogy. It is the death of my natural man. It is the letting go of all the silly things I think will make me happy that gives birth to the real stallion of happiness that I ride into heaven. It wasn't a lizard he rode into heaven. It was a given up lizard. It was a I let it go lizard. I want something better. And he got the stallion.
I was just thinking about how Jesus tells us he gives us weaknesses to make us strong. And so when we overcome something, it becomes our new strength. And so speaking how, like, when you overcome the natural man, it now becomes your new strength.
Beautifully stated. Remember, if men come unto me, I will show unto them their weakness. I give unto men weakness that they may be humble. And my grace is sufficient for anyone who humbles themselves and gives up the weakness so that I can turn that into a strength. Beautifully said. Thank you.
What happened to the angel that burned the lizard?
He went with him. We don't know, but it's Christ. Who probably came to everyone else trying to get them to stay.
And then so the main character is watching everyone else's stories and then he's like, okay.
Yeah, the main character, I assume, is C.S. Lewis. And he's watching everyone else's stories. The other thing that bothered me when I first read this is, well, I had to kill the lamb. How come Jesus kills the lizard? And over the years, I've come to the conclusion, I can't kill the lizard. I can't. But I can ask for his help to do so. He is the only one that has the strength to kill my lizard. I very much appreciate that he wrote that into the story, that the angel, that the burning one killed the lizard. My job is to let him, give myself to him so that he can. James.
I was just thinking, along with Hebrews 12:27, it's Jacob 4:7. And it just says, nevertheless, the Lord showeth us our weakness, that we may know that it is by his grace and his condescension unto the children of men that we have power
yeah.
to do these things.
He's the stallion. He is the stallion. By offering up my natural man, what he replaces it with is his ability. He is the stallion that I ride into heaven. It is my prayer that you examine what you're holding on to, what you're afraid to give up. I'm guessing every one of you are afraid to give up something, thinking, I can't let that go. That brings me so much happiness. It is my testimony to you. It is a stallion you would be, it is a lizard you would be giving up compared to the stallion he would replace it with. Why are you holding on to the lizard when he offers you a stallion? I would hope you would examine your life this week and find the areas where you're holding on to the lizard. I promise Delete those images from your phone. Their replacement is far greater. Delete the images from your head. Their replacement is far greater. They are a stallion compared to a lizard. And I say that in the name of Jesus Christ, amen.